I can get him to
talk to most of the senators who voted to send it back, and it's, from what I can determine, the problem lies in with Articles 91, or Sections 91 through 96.
Madam Chairman?
Senator John Burns.
I move that we delete Sections 91 through 96.
There's been a motion on, in Gross Senate Bill 80, that we remove Sections 91 through 96. Is there any discussion? Clerk, call the roll. Call the roll.
Senator John Brown.
Aye.
Senator Cook.
Aye.
Senator Hoyt.
Aye.
Senator Jones.
Aye.
I move that we return Senate Bill 80 to the Senate floor to pass as amended.
It's been moved that in Gross Senate Bill 80 be returned to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Chair, I want a
yeah.
question, please.
Sure.
It seemed to me that in the original Article 8 that I had moved to amend that the attorney, the district attorney would be present, and I want to see that language, if it's in there or how it's stated.
John? Senator Hoyt wants to see in Article 8 the language that we put in about the district attorney. Can you point that out,
yeah.
sir?
Subsection 5 of Section 149, this on page 59 of the engrossed bill.
Yes, I see it.
Section 5.
And as you understand that, Don, would this give the district attorney the right to gain any information that would be make it easier for him to prosecute, or by which the person involved might not be apt to incriminate himself?
No, the purpose of this is only to...
I know why I asked to put it in, but now I wonder if I did the right thing or not.
No, in my opinion, it would have no other effect and would other than to specifically state what was... we felt was the law anyway, and that is the district attorney would have a right to be heard.
I see. The fact that he was there while the questions were being asked to see if the man was eligible, would that help the district attorney to prosecute?
Well, in my opinion, no.
Okay, thank you. Question?
Further discussion?
Question.
Clerk Paul Roll.
Senator John Green.
Aye.
Senator Cook.
Aye.
Senator Hoyt.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to bring up another bill, Senate Bill 364.
Could we take 377 Greases for first and then go to that, or do you need to guess?
Okay, let's take that and then go.
All right.
Let's take her and then her testimony.
Right,
and
then we'll go to it. Grace, you're here on 377?
Yes. Chairman, members, I'm State Representative Grace Olivier Peck. I'm not here to discuss the wording or merits, the merits I think are good, but I mean anything in the makeup of the bill, I can see that you legal beagles know more about that than I do. But I'm here to bring you sort of a little personal message. I have been a guest out at the state prison several times at the Bible Society. They made a tribute to me one night. I don't know if you've seen the painting they did of me or not, so in the office, but it makes me look like what I am, which is not glamorous, but it's kind of good, I think. And I was a guest of the Lifer Society on a couple of occasions, and they asked me about this, and I wanted to tell you the great concern there is in the prison on this bill. I talked to members of their families, and one of the nights several were there, and they all came talking about this bill and the hope that they have that it is going to come out so some of them get to go back home sooner than they would otherwise. They're watching, they asked me, and I've called 2 or 3 days each day that you were going to have a session if I knew what you'd done, and I said, well, I went over, but the session was postponed, or I know the hearing was postponed on the bill. So that's the thing I wanted to bring to you, was that there's a great deal of interest being shown in this bill, not only with the prisoners themselves, but some of the security people and all have discussed it at different times. It's a top priority, I think, inside. And I think it's good myself. I talked to some of the family people, wives, and in a couple of cases, a daughter, and they are hoping that you see fit to pass this legislation out. like to have a chance to work on it in the House side.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of Representative Peck?
I'll vote for it.
Thank you. I'll tell them that.
I think we've also received a great deal of mail on this.
Well, I could bring it to you firsthand, and I'll call them back and tell them that I finally had a chance to tell you that they ask you to be favorable to consideration to it and let you know how much they're looking forward to it. And of course, they're all going to be good boys if they get out.
Tell me, they couldn't have had a better messenger.
I think there are amendments that they be made.
And the real problem voting to reduce the sentence of people that use loaded weapons, perpetrate armed robberies, and take shots at various people.
If they haven't been, Well, does the law in here state that they have to come under this dangerous offender law, or could this be amended so that you could consider someone dangerous whether they're under that particular description of in the law of a dangerous offender, someone that you thought was a dangerous offender, that who was there for armor, could you amend it so that these could be taken care of?
If we could amend it and accept people convicted of armed robbery, I'd vote for it.
Madam Chairman, in this case you may be interested in knowing that the service has done quite a bit of work on this, and it appears that it does need some redrafting and some amendments. And I promise you we're going to work on it, and I hope we'll get a bill out that we'll do what we all want.
Well, I hope so, too, but I would say to you, John, I wouldn't want to make it just armed robbery, period, because there are some of those, maybe someone who has committed armed robbery has been rehabilitated or changed, you know, so that they wouldn't be apt to do this again. You can't guarantee anyone, but there are some of them that their armed robbery
I'd like to move that Senate Bill 364 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay.
This is a bill that would have avoided the problem that recently arose with respect to the beach property, where the chairman of the Highway Commission was, to understate the case, not very excited about appealing the case involving people's rights to that property. It's the end of a long string of litigation where Lee Johnson, the Attorney General, originally sought to intervene. They went to the Court of Appeals. They held he didn't have the authority to do it. The only agency under the law that had the right was the Highway Commission. And Glenn Jackson and the commissioners just didn't want to do it. The only reason why they finally entered the appeal was, among other things, I called the governor and strongly urged him, I don't know if that did it or not, but anyhow, the next day he got Jackson to reconsider, and they did appeal.
How long ago was this that you talked to him?
The day after I was ousted as chairman of the Revenue Commission.
On line 9, I have a line through when necessary. Was that an amendment or just a suggestion?
I think that's existing land, existing law. I think we leave it in. The State Highway Commission and the state. What I intend is that it be alternatively. Now, I don't know if that's the effect of this language.
I don't think it says that.
The State Highway Commission, it should be, or the state land board when necessary. My objective is, and this is the draftsman's instructions, my instructions to the draftsman, I wanted them to have concurrent jurisdiction with the Highway Commission, so that the land board could do it if the Highway Commission didn't.
Well, why do we say concurrent jurisdiction?
I think that's in the wrong place there.
The State Highway Commission and the State Land Board, when necessary, shall undertake appropriate proceedings to have Oh, that's the wrong place. It should be the State Highway Commission and the State Land Board shall have concurrent jurisdiction.
And then go on to...
When necessary, and so on. So I remove then, Madam Chairman, on line 9, we amend it after the word board to add the word have concurrent jurisdiction. And then it would read, State Land Board, when necessary, shall undertake appropriate court proceedings to protect, settle, and confirm all such public rights and easements. And I think I would substitute on line 8 the word or.
Okay, are you making that motion? Right?
Yeah, in my motion that on line 8 we substitute the word or for and. On line 9 we take the new language that's on 10, have concurrent jurisdiction, and insert it after the word board.
Is there a discussion of the amendment?
Need both. Then you wouldn't want to argue.
The clerk called roll on the amendment. Say, John Burns.
I think you'd want a or. A.
Senator Keith Burns.
Aye.
Senator Cook.
Aye.
Senator Ivan.
Aye.
Senator Hoyt.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
Now I move it to the floor. Do pass as amended.
Discussion?
I kind of hate to give the land board more work to do. I kind of wanted to abolish it, along with the Secretary of State.
Oh, it's done.
And then,
just a minute.
Mr.
DeWinter, would you help us for a minute? Let's see if George thinks that's not very clear language.
Excuse me just a second. We do have an amendment to that by the Division of State Lands, which I think does make it clear.
Okay.
They would say the State Highway Commission.
What line?
This would be line 8. The State Highway Commission and the State Land Board shall have concurrent jurisdiction to undertake appropriate court proceedings when necessary to protect, settle, and confirm all such public rights and easements in the state of Oregon.
I move to amend whatever it is now so that it will read that way.
You put a hand back in.
Sure. Yeah, that's whatever it says.
That's in a different context. So
they put their hand back in.
You were right.
No, I just stayed here, man, so I didn't tell you.
Is there a discussion of the amendment? Clerk called roll on the amendment.
Okay,
John Green.
Aye.
Senator Lane.
Aye.
Senator Cook.
Aye.
Senator Ivers.
Aye.
Senator Hoyt.
Aye.
Madam Chairman. Aye.
Now I move it out too fast.
No more.
Senator Cook moves Senate Bill 364 out, do pass as amended. Discussion?
You going to carry it?
I'll carry it. I don't guarantee it's passed, it always does.
What's the number? Are we voting on it?
No, 364. We're about to vote.
Oh, yeah, that was a great job.
Oh, okay. Clerk call the roll. Senator John Green?
Aye.
Senator Keith Green?
Aye.
Senator Cliff?
Aye.
I
admit
I hurt my own
bills.
I'm quitting the legislature.
Senator Hoyt?
Aye.
Senator
Kevin?
Aye.
Well, what's the number of the 8th Affection Bill? We didn't have a quorum.
International Affection.
I think it cleaned up.
Well, we had the Inmate Affection Bill, and now we got the International.
You gave me the note, and I've got another shirt.
That makes
me
one of the
I've got a bill in here that we always have that the bar remembered to bring in to validate all marriages since 1973 that took place within the 60 days after the decree of divorce and legitimatizing children of the marriage.
Is that an opt-out?
No, we do it every biennial.
Are we still having to do that?
Yeah, we do them anyhow.
Well, there's some doubt. Anyway, you want to put the bill in as soon as well. Is there any objection? So ordered.
Imagine, this is the bill to end all that. Well, this is a no-fault divorce. We're going to put that... No, they...
We legitimize all...
We're going to end the necessity to ever do this again.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Can't legislate human morality.
Do you have the number? You don't have it yet, John.
Human relations.
It's one of the early numbers, though, because it was introduced the first day.
Yes, it was numbered by Adam and Eve.
That's number 25, huh?
Senate Bill 153.
The numbers I thought.
Tell me, any other book on the table set?
Oh, boy. No, I don't think you tabled it. might be the same.
In the table?
I don't think so.
What's that?
No.
Well, I don't know. I got a boost in here anyhow.
Is it in the other book? In the switch book?
I'm
found
it
now. It must be. I don't
we
know.
Tabled it, though.
Did we?
No,
I didn't think there was enough to go to the table that day.
No. Number 153, the alienation of affection.
Yeah.
Failed to pass, I guess. But I thought
that's failed to pass, no.
That's Senator Roberts' bill.
That's the error, sweetie. Our social services. We all worked hard on it.
And that's to abolish
no, I was supposed to say, this is not the alienation bill.
I move that Senate Bill 153 be taken off of the table.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to see the bill. Go out of the answer. I don't have it.
I don't have it.
It's in the table section of the
right.
Book.
Yeah,
right?
It says table. I
guess you're
right.
Okay.
Was
there
a
doubt in your mind?
There was.
Wasn't any noise.
Well,
I wouldn't tell you a lie, though.
But knowing you as I do, I've been mistaken. Now, you're almost as right as I am.
Yeah,
I'm
mistaken. That's
it.
Oh, I think it's probably a pretty good
bit. This takes the honey license away from some of these people.
Been a motion to take from the table Senate Bill 153. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator John Brand?
Aye.
Senator Keithman?
No.
Senator Cook?
Aye.
Senator Ivers?
No.
Senator White?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye.
I want to explain my vote. I voted aye because Senator Hoyt said that while this doesn't prevent poaching, it eliminate the hunting season.
I moved it. It's passed out. It's still on the table.
No.
Failed
to take it off.
Four votes.
Take
it off the table.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
Four votes.
Oh.
Ooh,
we forgot to count. I've been counting for 2 weeks.
Drag in a substitute here.
No, okay, he's not a substitute. No, he's been asking brother for a long time. He's out here working the just, you know.
You know, you've been pursuing this bill so hard for so many sessions. Do you have something in mind?
No, I want to. If some rich guy gets my wife, I want him to have her. But this is horrible. This is horrible. Have a good time. He's had a bad enough time lately.
All right. It's been moved that Senator 153 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation by Senator Hutch. Discussion.
I think it's a bad bill.
Further discussion.
Breaks down family relations.
It only breaks up wealthy families. You don't break up a poor family on this.
No, you forget, they do. The wealthy. The wealthy breaks up the poor family.
That's
no reason. The wealthy man's bill. Wealthy man's bill.
Senator Johnson.
Aye. Provided I don't have to carry it.
No.
Senator Cook.
Aye.
Senator Ivers.
No.
Senator Hoyt.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. Senator Roberts will carry it.
Put her on notice.
Strenuous arguments here.
We're going to fight to preserve the family.
Where's Wellington?
I'm there.
All of a sudden. Let's look at 712.
Same book, I hope?
No.
Unless you should have been here doing it at 6 a.m. this morning.
Well, Bruce wasn't here at 6 a.m. this morning.
Well, no, I was here in time for the action stuff.
6:12? 7:12.
Somebody told me to get out of bed this morning. I'd have been here inside. He's called, but there's nobody to get up.
So he just answers and says, hello, how are you? Goes back to sleep.
It's all about a committee video, I suppose. There's nobody to get out of bed.
Yeah, I don't remember this.
The hip is lender of low, made a close connection with St. Louis, or...
It's a good deal.
Moved out due pass.
With sale of goods or motors,
legally amended.
No, legally amended.
No.
Subject to lenders of all claims and fences and writing out a sale and borrow and
buyer
and against the seller.
Well, I usually get this bill, manager. Oh, you do it.
Basically, what it does is allows a purchaser to borrow money to serve the fences that
we have against the seller, we get the lender. If the seller and the lender win,
well, that's what we're dealing
with each other.
It's a circuit operation.
The holder in due course can't hide behind.
Right.
But it's not exactly a holder in due course situation. That situation, you sign a contract with the dealer and he'd assign it to a loan company. What happens in some situations is you go to the dealer and he goes across the street with you to the loan company and they arrange on a cash loan basis. This bill sustains those close connections between loan companies.
Further discussion? Senator John Burns has moved it to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Senator Ivers.
Question on line 26, section. It starts out, if a member makes a loan, huh, what member are they talking about?
Charlie?
That's the lender?
It should
say
lender.
It should
say
AM.
Is that in the original bill? Could the clerk check the original bill to see if that language is in there? Or is that necessary?
Sorry, what was it? If a member what?
Yeah, George pointed out there's member instead of lender. I wonder if the original bill might not have the correct language in it.
Page 2, line 33.
Line 26 on page 2 of Senate Bill 712. Check it and be sure it says a lender, if a lender. It now says a member.
I'm glad one of the
three
is
glad to have you around. You're good for something,
George. Gosh, I appreciate that.
I can
say the
same. Hold on. Senator Runcook moves that amendment. If there's no objection, so ordered. Senator John Burns has already moved it to the floor with a due pass. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator John Burns?
Aye.
Senator Cook?
Aye.
Senator Ivers?
Aye.
Senator Hoyt?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye. Senator John Brown. 792.
I need an explanation. 792.
Where is 792 now?
It's in the same book you're in.
Except in mine. 792.
You get
791, but I have no 792. Don't you? This extends the previous statute on other types of misdemeanors, I think, doesn't it?
You want to talk about it, Keith?
Yeah, that's right. That's right, remember. Kin tax and stuff. Well, we passed the expungement statute for pre-71 convicted drug offenders. The present expungement statute provides that if it's a Class C felony or a misdemeanor and 3 years expire, then and you don't get in any more trouble, then you can apply for expungement. This would provide that every defendant convicted of a felony at any time after the lapse of 5 years, 5 years, may move for expungement. Now, we had a long letter, Madam Chairman, from Judge Bransfield, didn't we, in connection with this particular bill?
No, it was on 377, wasn't it? That went to the same problem, the reducing the sentences. Or making the sentences equal in length after the passage of 40. Do we have a letter in the pack? Make a note that some of the books don't have them.
Nobody was burning up the typewriter.
It was 5 years.
I thought they were there. I talked to a couple of boys.
Well, you don't have a feeling about the
car. I don't know if they got it. That's all right. Talk to Paul.
We got another bill. Does about the same thing, don't you?
Don't tell anybody.
Huh? What happened to my bill?
Does anybody believe it?
It's a Saxon bill.
No, Saxon, here's what happened. Saxon looked at this bill, which is your bill.
I better read it then.
Well, do you want to send this expungement to Class A felony?
I'd leave it at the court. Leave it at the court. I know people who've committed murders that I know they're never committed with a crime and they're really handicapped throughout their life because of it. A crime of passion or something like that.
You going to let it apply to multiple offenders?
I don't think we ought to do that. I don't think we ought to do that. This is a one-timer. Everybody can make a mistake once.
Well, now I am next bill. Does Bill say that?
No.
You might put a statement of intent or a preamble in it.
Let's not do that yet. Let's see what we're right.
We ought to put in some bubbles and show it to the judge.
Your direction then is to John to amend it to provide for a first-time offender only, is that right?
If he's not been previously convicted of a crime, I guess.
We have two problems, I think, Madam Chairman. We passed the 3-year Class C felony one last session, largely to meet the problem with the drug offenders, and I think 3 years is appropriate there, particularly with the younger people maybe getting out of school and taking civil service exams or trying to get into medical school and law school and things. But when we go above a Class C felony level, I think it should be extended. And 10 years? 7 years? I don't know what other states have. Seems to me Nevada has 10, and I don't know. But,
I have no problem with that.
I think it should be limited. I think multiple offenders should be excluded. Multiple felons. We haven't that set up. So that's one amendment that I'd want to put in the bill.
Multiple offenders excluded and what? 7 years?
7 years.
7 years. Okay, well, is there anything else you want in the bill?
I don't want to carry it.
Let's look at 5-10. We have amendments in the Brown packet here. Actually, there are three sets of amendments, one by the ACLU, one by whom, John?
The other is by Mr. Williams, and another by Dr. Gray. Now, there are some oral amendments that were made by Mr. Butnick when he testified before the committee. But
that were adopted by the committee?
No, they have not been adopted.
Okay.
I'll bring those up.
Where are these amendments in this Brown packet?
The amendments should be in the Brown packet with Bill 510. Dr. Bray's amendments encompass Mr. Williamson's amendments as well as the ACLU amendments with one exception. And that's an exception, an amendment which the ACLU suggests, and it would delete an exception to the requirement that a person give his consent before such treatment as electroshocks are administered to him.
Let's not get into that. First, we'll discuss the Dr. Bray amendments, and then we'll take up the separate question of the ACLU.
What do they do, the Dr. Bray amendments?
John?
First, they extend the effective date of the bill, July 1, 1974. That's one change that he makes. Another change is that It requires, say, a judge in determining whether a person is mentally ill, that he determines beyond a reasonable doubt that the person be mentally ill.
Beyond a reasonable doubt?
Yes. Another amendment which they make is that the investigative report, which is given to the court, cannot be given to the two physicians which the court appoints to make a determination or a recommendation as to whether or not this person is mentally ill. This investigative report cannot be given to these two physicians for their consideration. This report is the result of an investigation prior to the court hearing.
Okay. Does anybody want to move the amendment?
Why, could I ask, why do they want to change this? Where does that, where is the reasonable doubt amendment? Where is that down?
On page 11, line 15. And page 8, line 31.
Page 11, line
16.
Well, I have a, I'm going to propose an amendment that's going to delete, but it's going to try to. It's going to try to delete all of section 15, 16, 17, and 18. And that speaks to the point here. And the reason that I'm going to do it, it speaks to the concern that the Judge Spencer raised in connection with the mandatory commitment maximum of 45 days, which appears on line 13 of page 9. And this bill, and I'm somewhat familiar with the committee and the task force to put it together, and a lot of the people on it know the history of it, but they mandate in there that no commitment in the state hospital should be for a period of over 45 days, and then they provide this rather cumbersome procedure that if a person requires additional hospitalization, that then you go through all these procedures. So I investigated, because that assumed that there's a whole lot of people being committed to the hospital now. They're there for a period of over, for long and extensive periods of time. And that really isn't true. And damage, 27% of those committed are released within 30 days. 50% are out within 44 days, 85% are out within 120 days, and only 15% of those committed in the last year were committed for over a period of 100, or stayed there for over a period of 120 days. I see some real cumbersome procedures, and it also speaks to the trial visit thing. So,
what sections are you moving? 15, 16?
Yeah. I'd like, what I'd like to do is to omit 15, 16, 17, and 18 and change the mandatory maximum to 6 months or a year.
And 5, 10?
Yeah. Because I see the trial visit situation as effectively being eliminated by a 45-day mandatory maximum. But they knew now, if you're committed, you stay there for a week or two or three or four, and then they send you home on a trial visit. And if you make it, they release you. But if you don't make it, you're still under commitment, and you don't have to go back through the court procedure. And I just think let's go back to court.
Is it your motion to take out 15, 16, 17, and 18 and change on line 13
45 days, strike 45 days, and change it to 6 months.
Yeah.
6 months is
180 days.
180 days, you want? Discussion of the amendment.
I'd like to hear somebody from the committee. Is there anybody here? They worked hard on this, and I don't think they recommend any changes in this part.
Doctor, do you want to address him?
I could. Mr. Williams is here, too, who is on the task force.
Yeah, I know. Do you both want to come up? Or?
I think Section 26 would preserve your trial visit on page 14. That allows trial visits up to 90 days.
Yeah, but if you have a mandatory commitment maximum of 45, they're incongruous, right?
Your initial commitment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're building in some very cumbersome procedures that, it seems to me, this results in more cost of administration. And the statistics do not support the fact that now, in a year, in the total intake of damaged hospitals,
I got them both of them. I got
2,900 people. Only 25.
You have a note on page 4 from Judge Spencer.
I think that's why we didn't feel it would be especially cumbersome. So few were actually there for that long, and much fewer than that would probably ask for hearings. New York was experienced when people were taken in only 1 in 30 after the hearing of the entire group. And I think that's been our experience in terminating trial visits, that a very small number asked for administrative hearings. But I don't, personally, I don't think there's any magic in 45 or 90. The committee put the figures around that, which I think that.
Well, since that's a maximum, you could send them home on a trial visit any time you want to, then, couldn't you?
Yes. As this is written, though, you're correct that the effective duration is the duration of the commitment period, so it's a maximum of 90 days. It could be less, as the bill is written.
The maximum is 40 days, 45, but then you provide for trial visits of 90.
Under first commitment, it would be a maximum of 45 days, in actuality.
Yeah. But, what if you put after 45 days, excluding any period of trial visit? The commitment shall be for a period of time not to exceed 45 days, excluding
inpatient commitment. Well, I'm all for getting these people out of the hospital and for making it harder, and I'm going to move for the reasonable cause amendment, or beyond a reasonable doubt. But I don't think it's necessary to have 15, 16, 17, and 18 in that cumbersome procedure. The reason that I put a, say, 6 months was that if a person was there for more than 6 months, or was up there to a point of 6 months, including however long he may have been gone for a trial visit, and if in the opinion of the hospital, they felt that he needed to stay, then they could petition the court without all the procedural business here to have him go through the court commitment procedure again. And it would relieve the administrative problems of tenants running the hospital here that's provided in here.
I'm not sure I understand your proposal. Are you proposing on line 13, page 9, that the duration be changed
to 180 days? And that in section 15, 16, 17, and 18 be deleted.
Well, then doesn't 19 have to be deleted? It refers to section 17.
Yeah.
And section 20 refers to 14 to 17, so that would have to be amended.
If this is changed to 180 days per commitment period, I think that section 17 provides a process to avoid going back to the court again unless the person specifically requests it. Do you not still need a procedure for initiation of
I'm inclined to think, doctor, that he probably should go back to the court whether he requests it or not, because if he's mentally ill, how can he effectively request the court? I think maybe somebody outside the house should look at it. If our objective really is to cut down on the caseload.
Well, he still could switch to voluntary status if he wants to make it better.
That's allowable at any time. That then would mean that the person who is there over a period of years would have to go back to court every 6 months.
Yep.
I would prefer not to see that. I think that there are individuals who do need to be in the hospital over a period of years. They're relatively few.
Yeah.
And that internal safeguards can be built in so that they have that option. But I think that would create me an unnecessary workload for those limited numbers of individuals in comparison to the process. I don't view the 45 days as a magical number. I think there was considerable debate back on committee, certainly within staff, as to the duration of the
event. Senator Hoyer, are you getting your question answered?
Well, getting towards them, I don't think that we've really got a complete meeting of minds. One says he agrees, one says he doesn't, but I don't think that we've got the reason. I can see John's point of view of not having a cumbersome procedure here and stepping up to 180 days, thinking that the hospital would use the parole or temporary release provisions to when they want to meet, when the patient didn't have to be there. But I'm not sure that I understand the doctors.
Well, I think what the doctor is saying that there are those people who are psychotic or manic or schizos who are really going to be there forever, and that if under my proposed amendment we're requiring them to go back before the court every 6 months. I guess I'm sympathetic to that, doctor. I understand it. Maybe we can do some more work on it, Madam Chairman. I'm very much opposed to the 45-day maximum because I think it effectively eliminates the an effective trial visit procedure, which I think is a good procedure and keeps people out of court.
Well, could you three act as an ad hoc committee and bring it back? You obviously know the most about it.
Can we do everything else too, like about this without a reasonable doubt?
I don't think there's any controversy about the beyond a reasonable doubt.
Madam Chairman, can I bring up Mutnick's amendments, which are not in gray?
Well, I think since John isn't here, it'd be best to discuss them. Well, you were here when Mutnick was here.
Yes.
And if you can meet with them when they meet and bring it up then. Did Hank go? Then I have another bill here that Tom Mahoney would like the Judiciary Committee to put in. It would do away at the present time. You know, you can get a divorce after a default simply on an affidavit. You never have to appear in court. He feels that's wrong and that there should have to be an affirmative showing in court, or that you should have to go to court and not be able to get it ex parte by affidavit.
what's your pleasure with putting the bill in?
Those rules. Does the rules mean anymore?
Any objection?
I don't know why the rules didn't put it in.
Well, he wants it here.
Well, why don't we explore the subject matter before we go to extent printing expense?
Okay.
Try and be as charitable as you can when you report that to Senator Mahoney. I'd like to know what people like Harrington and some of these experts in the divorce field think about something like this.
I think that one really took Harrington by surprise. I would suspect that Harrington is fully in sympathy with Mahoney's position, but I don't know. John, you want to call Harrington and find out what his position is on the affidavit divorce?
Bill Hedlund says he found Phil Harrington downstairs.
Oh.
Maybe we can
yeah.
Harrington says, go ahead. I'd have no objection to anything.
Okay.
Is the attorney on Northeast Broadway?
Francis Harrington.
Francis Harrington.
Yeah, attorney. Oh, no. Okay.
Look at 835. This was a bill that the circuit court judges asked me to put in, and you gave me your permission. At the present time, sometimes they are requiring that in order to count the days that a defendant has been in jail for credit on his sentence, that they have to be taken back up to court, and that the judge has to count the time, and therefore there has to be proof made of the time that the person has been in jail. And they think it would be a much more satisfactory method to have the sheriff compute the time this person has been in jail, because he has personal knowledge of it. And it would save them from holding an extra hearing.
That's all it does, just let the sheriff do it instead of the judge.
Yeah. Move it.
Move it.
Senator Ivers has moved Senate Bill 835 out with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
How does the sheriff get this information to the proper authorities, to the prison? Does it say that in there, please? It just says you should compute it. It doesn't say how you should deliver the information. Maybe that's nitpicking, but...
Well, down in line 24, it says that sentence shall be determined by the term which evidently encompasses the time that has been certified by the sheriff to apply to the sentence time.
Well, my point is, it seems like if the sheriff gets through that guy, that's the last hopefully you'll ever see of him. It seems like when he delivers the prisoner to the prison, he ought to also have a statement in there that he served so many days in such and such a county jail. And that's part of the record then. Otherwise, I don't see how that they'd ever get that information later on.
And
sheriff don't keep
and,
book on the wooden board, do they?
Prior to his delivery thereat, shall be computed by the sheriff and delivered to the
Corrections Division?
Madam Chairman, excuse me there. Whenever a person is delivered to the state institution, there is a provision in the statutes now to require the sheriff to indicate how much time he has spent. The situation here is where the man has spent time in a county jail, and he has never been taken to a state correctional institution. So I would think that the man would be in the sheriff's jail, would he, all
yeah.
the time?
Yeah.
I mean, this man never goes to corrections at all?
No, this particular bill doesn't deal with a situation where, say, a person is sent to a state institution, correctional institution.
Yeah.
There's a statute that currently exists which requires, say, in that situation, the sheriff to deliver to the director of the state institution.
Well, it says the time that a person is sentenced to imprisonment in the penitentiary is confined after.
Those three lines, don't say
I don't think he was referring to that. I think he was, because under present law, the sheriff has to furnish this information. This just allows him to do the computing rather than the judge, but it would still come under existing provisions, doesn't it? And then it asks county jails under section 2. In that case, he would know because the prisoner would be there.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get a question answered.
Excuse me, Madam. Yeah. I'm Dale Mann, the district attorney from Union County, and this is a problem that we have coming up.
Good.
And
have a chair.
It was down on another issue. Rather interesting. And 137.320, which I think is the question that was raised regarding the sheriff. When the judgment includes commitment to the legal and physical custody of the Corrections Division, the sheriff shall deliver the defendant together with a copy of the interest judgment and a statement signed by the sheriff of the number of days. Now, this is the question.
That's taken care of.
The defendant was in prison prior to this delivery to the superintendent of the penal institution. And I'm not certain what 137.370.
Well, there's a case in Lane County that it was reversed on 137.370 because the time hadn't been computed by the court.
Excuse me, Madam Chairman. I think this is the fact pattern was this. The man was convicted of a misdemeanor, and he was sent to the county jail. He didn't come to a state institution. And he then wanted credit for the time he had spent in the county jail prior to his the sentence. Now, evidently, under the existing statute, it's construed that a sheriff has to compute the time only if the man is sent to a state correctional institution.
Oh, I see. If he's retained.
So if he's simply retained in the county institution, evidently the sheriffs are not computing the time that he spent prior to the sentence and crediting that to his sentence.
Well, 835 only talks to the correctional institution. It doesn't say about local sentencing. I mean, that
section 2. I'd have to take a look at the statute again, but I think it refers to this particular provision as applying when you're talking about a person staying in a county institution.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've changed this provision so that, let me take a look at the statute here just a second.
We're on 835, John.
Yes, the current statute reads, another statute, this is 137.390, reads as like this. The commencement and termination of a sentence of imprisonment in the county jail is to be ascertained by the rule prescribed in 137.370, which is the section that is being amended there. Evidently, presently, this 137.370 is not construed by the court to require the sheriff to compute time where the man is sent to a county jail and then wants credit for time spent in the county jail prior to the sentence. This language that is being placed in 137.370 is there to clarify that, so the sheriff will definitely compute the time whether the man goes to the state institution or is goes back to the county jail.
Yeah, I see what you're
saying. The only language that currently requires the sheriff to compute time is in yet another statute, which says when the judgment includes commitment to the legal and physical custody of the corrections division, then the sheriff shall deliver the defendant, together with a copy of the entry of judgment and a statement signed by the sheriff for the number of days the defendant was in prison prior to his delivery. So evidently there is confusion there. The sheriff does not know that he's supposed to compute time if the man is sent to the county jail, especially in an instance where a misdemeanor is involved.
Sure, it takes a lawyer to read a bill. You got to know all the rest of Dino West and all it means.
Senator Ivers has moved to send 835 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion?
You can't get it by reading the bill, John, I tell you. From one lawyer to another, you can't do it.
What you're saying is that the... you're not going to trust the joint to compute the good... the time served prior to going down, you want the sheriff to have it computed when he goes. Is that what you're saying?
No. Currently, the sheriff computes the time. Or at least the statutes have been construed that the sheriff has to compute the time and deliver a copy of that computation when the guy goes to the state institute.
Right.
Evidently, the sheriffs are not computing the time if the guy is sentenced to a county jail. And so that raises the problem. Say, if the guy... had not had time spent in the county jail prior to sentence, credited against his sentence, and he comes to the court to get this credited, there's no computation of time available for the court. The sheriff evidently has not been doing it.
Herb, did you want to say something?
Well, I was just thinking that if it takes this long to figure out what this says, just think of someone who doesn't know how the problem was generated. It sounds to me like it's a poor way of trying to solve the problem. I mean, I think there would be a cleaner way. I bet you could write an amendment to that other statute, which seems to be the problem, and cleanly direct the solution to the problem.
I put it back in the sentencing section.
Yeah.
Total time should be computed both before and after sentencing. And that would solve it.
Yeah.
One other thing that complicates this is that some jails, like in Eugene, are run by the city. The sheriff doesn't run the jail. And then you might have...
Well, plus the fact that we have the regional jail bill, where we're trying to get the cities and counties out of jail business and have the correctional institution do it. And I think you're right. I think he's right, Betty. I think that... if it were in the sentencing section, and it would be direct. Because I'm all in favor of it, but they haven't been doing it.
You know, the thing with Eugene is the sheriff's elected. He doesn't have to be able to talk.
He's a
poll.
Let's look into that, John. See if we can do something with that.
You can't replace the argument to get a sheriff or an assessor appointed.
Well, if we eliminate 27 counties, do you vote for that?
Yes, if you vote against 2004.
Oh, I'm okay on that.
Dad, you got me hooked.
God,
what is this? I think that's as far as we can go today until we get to the 4 o'clock hearing, unless there's something else you want to bring up.
I quit.
Okay, we're adjourned.
I hope Mr. Harris.